From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, U.S. President Barack Obama comments on Russia's economic troubles. The U.S. considers putting North Korea back on the state sponsor of terrorism list. Does air pollution contribute to the increase in the number of cases of autism? We'll look at these and other stories on today's International Edition. I'm Dave DeForest. U.S. President Barack Obama says Russia's economic troubles show the Russian President Vladimir Putin has not managed to outmaneuver him or the United States. In an interview with CNN television on Sunday, Mr. Obama rejected the notion that Mr. Putin is a chess master who has outmaneuvered the United States and the West in the struggle over Ukraine. Mr. Putin remains defiant despite a looming recession triggered by falling oil prices and a 40% drop in the value of the ruble. He warned Russians to prepare to undergo certain difficulties in the days and months ahead. He said his country will not back down from supporting compatriots in Crimea. His foreign ministry has promised to retaliate against Western sanctions. John Besmers, director of the Center for European Studies at the Australian National University, told VOA's Victor Beatty, everyone was outmaneuvered during the early stages of the Ukraine crisis.
The invasion of Crimea was a new form of warfare, so-called hybrid warfare, in which the ground had been well prepared by very, very skillful and blanket propaganda, both domestically and externally. And then we saw the spectacle of Russian special forces going in and pretending to be something else, and in uniforms without insignia, in combat fatigues without insignia, which is, by the way, a breach of international rules of war. But it caught everyone by surprise, I think, including seemingly the United States. And it's taken quite a while, I think, for the West to get its collective act together. And there's a very good reason for that, of course, that the West is composed of democratic countries. Democratic countries have complicated internal processes before they can arrive at the difficult external decisions and policies. And that's what we've seen. I think it's actually the case that the U.S. response has been more vigorous and more effective than the European response was for a long time. But I think now that gap is beginning to close, and I think I'd pay some credit there for the patient determination of Chancellor Merkel. The Europeans are in a very, very postmodern, as people sometimes say, semi-pacifist frame of mind. They're prepared to take part in international police actions, usually under U.S. leadership, but they're not particularly keen on that, and they're less keen now than they've probably ever been. So I think their response was initially very, very slow and reluctant, and this was apparent to the Russians.
Is Mr. Putin a chess master?
He did get off on the front foot, and it's taken quite a while for the West to draw him back a little bit. And I must say, there's been a good deal of good fortune there. It hasn't all been the West's pushback by any means. Despite conspiracy theories suggesting the United States is responsible for the oil price, I don't believe that that's a serious line of argument, though you will hear it. But the price of oil has gone down and the ruble with it, and Russia has come under the most serious economic pressure for several years, and it looks as though it's going to get worse before it gets better. Quite recently, the Russian finance minister, Siluanov, said that Russia's economic troubles are $100 billion down to the oil price and $40 billion down to sanctions. So it hasn't been sanctions quite so much. And as far as the sanctions go, just one last point on that, had it not been for the tragedy of MH17, I doubt that the Europeans would have reached the consensus that they did on the sort of sanctions that they introduced, which started to look a bit more serious.
In his Sunday broadcast interview, Mr. Obama said right now Mr. Putin's presiding over the collapse of his currency, a major financial crisis, and a huge economic contraction. Do you agree with him?
My understanding is that we're speaking mainly at this stage about a 5% contraction next year. Just for comparison, in 2009, Russia had a 9% contraction, and Mr. Putin rode through that without any trouble. He's setting off from a pretty good vantage point in this case because he is still over 80%. There has been a credible opinion poll done since the ruble collapse, which showed him still over 80%. Approved by the Russian people. So obviously this is, I would say, something that is likely to sober Russia up. But it will depend on what happens next and how severe the trough proves to be. It will be a trough. It could be much worse than 4 or 5%. The worse it is, in a sense, the more chance we'll get of Russia resuming some kind of more sane public life. I think they've collectively become a bit hysterical.
And as for Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko's visit to Kiev on Sunday, Besmer says Mr. Lukashenko is interested in a truce in Ukraine in part out of concern that Russia's aggressive behavior may be turned on Belarus, another former Soviet republic. Despite Mr. Lukashenko's strong pro-Russian positions, Russia and Belarus are currently locked in a trade war. Two rounds of negotiations in Minsk in September produced ceasefires and a degree of self-rule in pro-Russian eastern Ukraine. Kazakhstan's president, Nursultan Nazarbayev, is to meet his Ukrainian counterpart, Petro Poroshenko, today in Kiev. He is expected to offer support for Ukraine's independence and territorial integrity. This is International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Dave DeForest in Washington, sitting in for Susan Yockey.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, The Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
Thank you, Vic. China's foreign ministry says it does not have enough information to determine whether reports that North Korea used Chinese facilities to stage a cyber attack on Sony Pictures are true. A foreign ministry spokeswoman says China is opposed to all forms of cyber attacks and would not reach any conclusions without having enough facts. The United States is in talks with China about getting help to block cyber attacks from North Korea. U.S. President Barack Obama says the United States is reviewing whether to put North Korea back onto its list of state sponsors of terrorism following the cyber attack on Sony Pictures, which U.S. officials are blaming on North Korea. VOA's Victor Beatty has more.
In a pre-recorded appearance Sunday on the cable news network program State of the Union with Candy Crowley, Mr. Obama said the cyber attack last month on Sony Pictures, resulting in the leak of confidential data, fell short of an act of war.
No, I don't think it was an act of war. I think it was an act of cyber vandalism that was very costly, very expensive. We take it very seriously. We will respond proportionally, as I said. But we're going to be in an environment in this new world where so much is digitalized that both state and non-state actors are going to have the capacity to disrupt our lives in all sorts of ways. We have to do a much better job of guarding against that.
Mr. Obama did not elaborate on what action the U.S. might take, but suggested North Korea could be placed back on the list of state sponsors of terrorism after a careful evaluation of the facts. Pyongyang was removed from that list by the Bush administration in 2008. The incoming chairman of the Senate's Armed Services Committee, Senator John McCain, insisted on the same program Sunday that the hacking was more than vandalism, but a new form of warfare, and, quote, we need to react vigorously, including reimposing sanctions. On the Fox News Sunday broadcast, Congressman Mike Rogers, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, said it is time to ramp up sanctions.
A nation state was threatening violence. They went into a company and they used something called a wiper virus. They wiped out data. This was a nation state who attacked an American company and then threatened violence in that second order against people who would go to the movie. That's a huge and significant problem. This is the country that tested nuclear weapons as late as last year.
Rogers says the U.S. has the capability of launching a retaliatory cyber attack. U.S. investigators have reportedly connected the hacking to North Korea, which has denied any responsibility. Pyongyang condemned the movie, The Interview, as an act of terrorism and acknowledged the hacking may have been the work of pro-regime supporters. A group calling itself Guardians of Peace took responsibility for the attack. Sony was preparing a Christmas Day release of the comedy film about two journalists recruited by the Central Intelligence Agency to assassinate North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Last Wednesday, the Hollywood studio decided to pull the film after top theater chains canceled plans to show it. Sony's lawyer, David Boies, in an appearance Sunday on the NBC program Eat the Press, defended the Hollywood filmmaker's decision to pull the movie, estimated to have cost $40 million ahead of its debut.
The theaters were subject to threats of physical violence against the theaters and against their customers. And quite understandably, a large number of them, a majority of them, decided not to show the picture when it was scheduled.
Boys called the hacking a state-sponsored criminal attack on an American corporation and its employees by North Korea.
I think that what we have to do is use the president's recognition of the importance of this issue as a rallying cry so that all Americans can unite against what is really a threat to our national security.
And he promises the interview will be distributed at some point, although he declined to provide details. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said Foreign Minister Wang Yi denounced all forms of cyberterrorism during a conversation Sunday with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, although the statement did not mention North Korea. Japan Monday also denounced the hacking attack on Japan-based Sony, saying it poses a national security threat, and Tokyo said it's closely coordinating with the U.S. Korea analyst Sun Yung Lee of Tufts University says there are many ways the U.S. can strike back against North Korea.
More enhanced targeted financial sanctions. Many people, including U.S. policymakers, have this mistaken notion that U.S. sanctions against North Korea are maxed out, that there's no more that the U.S. can do because the U.S. has been sanctioning North Korea for half a century. This is simply not true.
Lee says the least Washington should do is put the North back on the state sponsor of terrorism list. He says it can also punish North Korean officials accused of censorship and human rights abuses, as well as impose a travel ban striking at Pyongyang's need for tourists. The North has threatened to hit back if Washington attempts to punish it for the hacking attack. Pyongyang will reportedly not attend Monday's U.N. Security Council meeting, where its human rights record will be discussed for the first time. Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
President Obama and U.S. lawmakers have left Washington for the remainder of the year, but the city remains focused on developments on the world stage. VOA's Michael Bowman reports this week will bring continued attention on a diplomatic opening between the United States and Cuba, as well as North Korea's alleged role in hacking the media giant Sony.
While some Cuban exiles protest in Miami, and Cubans on the island hope for an economic boost,
we will have new cars. Things will absolutely change.
President Raul Castro says renewed ties between Washington and Havana do not signal an end to communism in Cuba.
De la misma forma que nunca nos hemos propuesto.
In the same way we have never demanded the United States change its political system, we will demand respect for ours.
Respeto al nuestro.
Such comments confirm the worst fears of President Obama's critics, like Republican Senator Marco Rubio.
Engagement by itself does not guarantee or even lead to political freedoms. And that the Cuban government controls every aspect of their economy. They intend to follow the model of Vietnam and China, where they can grow their economy, but they do not grow political freedoms. In fact, they repress them.
Late last week, Mr. Obama departed for a holiday vacation in Hawaii. Before leaving, he defended the decision to rebuild relations with Cuba.
I don't anticipate overnight changes. But what I know deep in my bones is that if you've done the same thing for 50 years and nothing's changed, you should try something different if you want a different outcome.
Meanwhile, Sony is defending its decision not to release a movie that ridicules North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Sony Pictures chief Michael Linton appeared on CNN's Fareed Zakaria GPS program.
We have not caved, we have not given in, we have persevered, and we have not backed down. We have We have always had every desire to have the American public see this movie.
Washington has become increasingly alarmed over America's vulnerability to cyber theft and cyber attacks, concerns now heightened after federal officials concluded North Korea was behind the massive digital breach at Sony.
Now, our first order of business is making sure that we do everything to harden sites and prevent those kinds of attacks from taking place. We will respond. We will respond proportionally, and we'll respond in a place and time and manner that we choose.
North Korea has denied any involvement in the Sony hack. The episode, along with the opening to Cuba, will be subjects of intense congressional scrutiny when lawmakers return to Washington in January. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Looking at some health news, women exposed to the highest levels of fine particulate air pollution late in their pregnancies are 2 times more likely to give birth to a child with autism. That's according to the largest study to date looking at the link between autism and pollution. Jessica Berman reports.
Researchers analyzed data from 116,000 mothers and their children in all 50 states. Investigators led by Mark Weisskopf of Harvard University found pregnant women exposed to high levels of fine particulate matter air pollution during their third trimester of pregnancy were at highest risk of having an autistic child. Their increased risk was double that of women who lived in areas with low levels of particulate pollution. The Harvard study found that timing of exposure was critical. The researchers detected no increased risk of autism spectrum disorder in children whose mothers were exposed to high levels of pollution before becoming pregnant. And the study found airborne pollution does not appear to increase the risk of children developing autism after they are born. Weisskopf, an environmental and occupational epidemiologist, says the finding is compelling, even though it is not evidence of a direct link between pollution and autism.
Finding an association like this that's very specific in time rules out a lot of other possible explanations for that. So it really ratchets up the strength of our confidence that we've got something really related to the air pollution here.
To the extent possible, Weisskopf says expectant mothers should avoid exposure to air pollution.
You can avoid being in extremely polluted cities during pregnancy if possible. You can also, choose to go running in a park rather than next to a street. But that said, I think it's also very important to recognize that autism spectrum disorders is a very multifactorial disorder, and there are lots of reasons why risk could be increased.
Autism, which runs the spectrum from mild to severe impairment, is believed to be caused by a combination of environmental and genetic factors that predispose individuals to the disorder. Paul Wong is head of medical research at Autism Speaks, an organization that advocates on behalf of families with autistic children. He says the findings, published online in Environmental Health Perspectives, are very compelling. Wong notes the last 3 months of pregnancy are a time of accelerated neurological development in the fetus. For now, he says, the study does not change the autism group's basic recommendation.
For parents of children who have already been diagnosed, the focus should continue to be on treatment for them, on the behavioral educational therapies that are available and that we know can help kids who are diagnosed with autism.
Meanwhile, Weisskopf says researchers are trying to identify the specific substances in fine particulate air pollution that increase the risk of autism, as well as women who are at greatest risk for giving birth to a child with the disorder. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
An Australian court has revoked the bail of the partner of an Iranian-born man who last week carried out a deadly attack on a cafe in Sydney. Amira Drudis was the partner of attacker Manharan Monis. Monis was shot and killed last week when police stormed the cafe where he was holding 17 hostages. 2 hostages died in the incident. He had referred to himself and in the media as an Islamic cleric, although he claimed expertise in astrology, numerology, and black magic. Well, thank you for joining us for International Edition today. You can get the latest news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day at our website, voanews.com. Sitting in for Susan Yaki today, I'm Dave DeForest in Washington. Have a good day. This is Today in History. On December 22nd, 1769, a Sino-Burmese war ended in an uneasy truce. The war was considered a disaster for China, which lost more than 70,000 soldiers. The war laid the foundation for the present-day boundary between the two countries. In 1858, Italian composer Giacomo Puccini was born in Lucca, Italy. He is best known for the operas Madame Butterfly, La Boheme, and Tosca. The rebel city of Savannah, Georgia, fell to Union General William Tecumseh Sherman in 1864, concluding his famous March to the Sea during the American Civil War. On this date of that year, Sherman sent a message to President Abraham Lincoln saying, "I beg to present you as a Christmas gift the city of Savannah." In 1894, French Army officer Alfred Dreyfus was convicted of treason in a court-martial that triggered charges of anti-Semitism. In 1944, German troops demanded the surrender of American forces during the World War II Battle of the Bulge. The demand prompted the famous one-word reply by General Anthony McAuliffe, "Nuts!" In 1878, during the third plenum of the 11th National Congress of the Communist Party of China, Deng Xiaoping reversed Mao-era policies and pursued a program of Chinese economic reform. In 1989, Berlin's Brandenburg Gate reopened after nearly 30 years, effectively ending the division between East and West Germany. In 2001, Richard Reed attempted to destroy a passenger airliner by igniting explosives hidden in his shoes. In 2003, he was found guilty on terrorism charges and sentenced to multiple life terms. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Barack Obama has called the U.S.-India relationship a defining partnership of the 21st century. Our partnership, built on mutual interests, mutual respect, and common values, will deliver progress to the people of India and the United States. We continue to discuss ways our governments, businesses, and people can partner to advance issues that are important to both countries, such as security, energy, technology, and trade. There is much that we can do together to help address India's most pressing demands, improving agricultural productivity, expanding manufacturing, strengthening the services sector, promoting innovation and creativity, improving health and education, enhancing security and addressing India's growing energy needs, said U.S. Trade Representative Michael Froman. So, for example, the United States stands ready to support Prime Minister Modi's Make in India initiative and help India successfully achieve its manufacturing objectives without distorting its trade relations with the United States or other major trading partners. With its emphasis on innovation and new technologies and its flourishing movie industry, India has a strong incentive to legislate and to enforce a world-class intellectual property rights regime, an interest it shares with the United States. In fact, President Obama and Prime Minister Modi have already announced the formation of a high-level working group on intellectual property rights. Ultimately, the most important factor determining the future evolution of our bilateral economic relationship is the quality of the business environment based on transparency, consistency, predictability, creating regulatory and legal certainty, maintaining policy stability and forging an innovation environment, achieving tax simplification and predictability, raising investment caps and lowering tariffs, consulting with stakeholders through notice and comment, streamlining layers of approval, and eliminating bureaucratic obstacles, said Ambassador Froman. The future of our partnership remains, as it has always been, ours to define. Now the responsibility falls on each of us, whether in government, business, or the nonprofit sector, to build on the recent momentum. We must set our sights on the big, yet achievable accomplishments within our reach. Forward together, we must go further.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.